Welcome to the Great Security Debate. This show has experts taking sides to help broaden understanding of a topic. Therefore, it's safe to say that the views expressed are not necessarily those of the people we work with or for. Heck, they may not even represent our own views, as we take a position for the sake of the debate. Our website is greatsecuritydebate.net, and you can contact us via email at feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net or on Twitter @securitydebate. Now, let's join the debate already in progress.
Because I've had to do like a lot of self-reflecting on, you know, when is it time to go? Like, if it wasn't for, I probably never would have left.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you know that it was time to go? Or how did she help you know that it was time to go?
This is tough because you build up frustrations, right? You have good days and bad days. Sometimes you have good months. There was, I'll definitely call him a leader, but it was somebody that had mentored me for most of my career. And he hired into the company I worked at previously, literally the same month I did. Our badges had the same date on them. And he eventually became president of the entire sales organization and so forth. And at any point in my career where I felt like I was done, there was nothing else to accomplish in this team. And it was either like I move up or move over, right? And somehow he would find a role or a project. And each time that was great. And when he ended up leaving the company, he actually went into tech. And when I found out, like he had sat me down to say, hey, there's this announcement coming. I wanted you to be one of the first to know. And I remember looking him like right in the eyes, like, if you're leaving, you have to take me with you. Like, what do I do without you? You know what I mean? Like, it was like one of those moments. I didn't say that to him, but it's what I was thinking in the back of my head. And he said, this could open up some other possibilities for you. So you got to consider that, right? Those possibilities never opened up. And all the stresses that I had just kept compounding. And they would tell me like, you know, Brian, it's that you're good enough, you're nice enough, you know, gosh darn it, just try, you know, but in different words, right? And
was it in the Stuart Smalley voice?
Yeah, exactly. And I used to tell people
it's
all the time,
on his mirror.
You know how you give people advice, but you don't follow your own advice?
Oh, no, mm-hmm. I've never experienced that at all.
Oh, okay.
Of course I have.
I'll give an example, though. I would tell people all the time, you should interview at least once or twice a year. Not because you're looking for a new job, right? But so you understand, one, how to interview and what people are looking for in a candidate. So when the time comes, you're giving your best foot forward.
Right.
But here I never did that. I always felt comfortable. There was always this next role or next opportunity. But going back, I traveled, you know, almost 200 days out of the year. So I never knew that I really wasn't present until I was present. And that happened after I switched jobs. But when Kelly and I sat down, we went on a trip, just the two of us. And she said, it was kind of an open reflection. I didn't see kind of the person I had become or was becoming. And she said, honestly, if you really needed to, she goes, you're never going to find another job unless you quit. And unless you just leave. She goes, because you're willing to miss interviews because you're being asked to travel somewhere or for this meeting or for this. And you're telling the company you're talking to, hey, sorry, this came up. I have to travel here. And you think you're telling that company that you're interviewing with that I take my job very serious, but they're looking at you saying you don't take us serious. And she was right. And it was getting away from everything, just sitting down, the two of us, and her telling me that it's going to be okay, even if you don't get a job in a month, 2 months, 3 months. But she said she had the utmost confidence I would get a job.
That's great. That's great to have that kind of support. And I think it's necessary to have that kind of support and open discussion in order to be able to move on. I know too many people that have sat in their jobs because they don't want to have that conversation, you know, primarily because they just don't want to have that conversation. They either don't feel like they have the support or won't get the support, and therefore don't even try to ask. And I think that's, I know a number of people in that state, and for whatever the reason is that's making them want to leave their job or make a change in their job, they're not able to take that first step.
It's tough to do, though. I mean, you think about it, the fear of the unknown is huge. It's like, it's the same thing when doing stocks, or the loss aversion, right, is so strong. We're so adverse to loss that we'll go to great lengths to avoid loss and really cap potential. But, you know, I think as I kind of read through the article that you sent out, Dan.
And which article, you know, which article was it?
This was from Helen Patton.
Was this Helen Patton's article?
It was indeed.
Ah, yes.
You know, I can't help
listening. Check in the show notes. Now departed, although that sounds a little more morbid than actually the case. Helen Patton, the Chief Information Security Officer at Ohio State University, recently announced her departure and wrote an article that was what became this, became the base of the discussion for this. And so check the show notes for that. It's called Security Leadership Moving On.
And it's a really good article. And I can't help but thinking, kind of before you get to that article, at some point you have to take a step back and have a, you know, as Brian was talking about, kind of self-reflection on who you are, what makes you who you are, and what you want, right? Because you think about staying versus going, you know, as you go through some of her points, can't help but think at some point you've got it, and this is probably oversimplifying it, you have to decide, are you a builder or are you a maintainer, right? If you're a builder, you can only build so far, and then it's time to hand off and allow somebody else to take it to the next place. I think, unfortunately, you stay in an organization too long and you cap the potential of what was built. You know, sometimes change is one of the biggest components that allows it to thrive and step up to the next level. You know, I look at my own case and stepping out and moving over to American Axle and watching the role immediately shift back at Penske and kind of who was moving into it, what he's going to be able to do, be able to take more of a leadership role and build out a bigger team. And it's great to see that. I'm not sure if I would have got there in the same position over time. So change became a really positive for that organization. Then for me personally, moving to a new venture.
And a new set. I mean, there's so much to unpack in your, you know, in that four sentences you just said, that's so valuable. One, the idea that leaving isn't necessarily just for you. It leaving opens up a pipeline. I was in a number of large companies in which there was a log jam. We'd often talk about the log jam above us, in which there were people all of a similar age, all of a similar place in their career. And this was, you know, these were companies that people didn't leave from. These were that still companies of the, you know, job for life mindset. And as a result, they were doing exactly what they were supposed to in a company like this. They were staying in their roles. They were growing in their roles. But as you go up in the organization, there are fewer and fewer of those roles. And therefore, if people aren't actively moving, or if the organization isn't actively encouraging change, there is a logjam below that you never get the chance to see what those people would do in those next level leadership roles. And I think that is, that was, you know, many years ago, but I think now that's more well understood and more well accepted, that change is as much for the person as it is for the organization, is valuable for the person as it is for the organization.
Absolutely. And on a personal level, I mean, it's easy to rationalize and do the, well, what if, and you're running through all the risk scenarios, and you know, the grass isn't always greener on the other side, and all the cliche kind of things you can say about it. But, you know, I remember going through leadership at one point and they were talking about opportunities and just kind of boiling it down to the present and the future, right? As long as you hold on to the present, you can't grasp the future at the same time. You can't hold on to both. You have to let go to move forward. And it's tough, right? Because it gets into that fear of the unknown on what's next. But I think there's got to be an element of self-realization and trust in yourself that if some of those what if scenarios play out, if some of those risks come to fruition, that you have evolved enough as a leader, as a person, or are confident enough in your skill set that you can adapt on the fly to what you need to do.
Oh, absolutely. And the idea of getting the opportunity to do that is as important as the willingness to be able to do that. And sometimes that does mean changing organizations in order to have that, you know, have that potential happen. And it's not just for the old reason when we all started our careers of the only way to get a pay rise is to leave and come back. This is not, you know, this is not about that. This is truly about opportunity and truly about, you know, finding growth in scope, in breadth, in field, in vertical.
And that's actually, it's to go a little tangential on that, Dan, and to build on conversations that we've had recently. I think that's it's a good time to bring up the point of networking. I think there's still a lot of people, at least in our industry, look at a lot of IT people are introverts, right? I'm an introvert myself. So I get it. But networking, if you are looking to move on professionally and continue to climb that ladder, now granted, not everybody has aspirations to climb the ladder, and that's fine, right? That it doesn't, everybody doesn't have to have the same aspirations. But if you do have aspirations to continue to move up in leadership, take on bigger and bigger roles, networking is key to creating those opportunities. You have to put yourself out there. You have to build your connections. And I was talking to somebody I was mentoring recently, and I know it's kind of a tough move as you're starting to build that network, right? But you've got to see it as kind of falling dominoes, that you've just got to find that one, and that one then grows into two goes into four into eight, right? It becomes kind of a spider web as it gets out, but you have to take that initial step to build that network.
One thing I would say too is, When someone says, you know, don't be scared to make change, be scared, but revel in it. Know that if you are scared, it's natural. Like, when people ask me, like, how did you leave automotive and go into tech? And not to pivot back where I always say that automotive is
tech.
Wait,
you were in automotive, Brian? This is a news to me.
No, it was automotive technology. But anyhow, when I made that decision to change, I always tell people, and this is true in the sense that I looked at the direction of autonomy, electrification, AI, and said that you look at data storage, security of that data analytics, that I wanted to go work for a company that was doing that. But the reality was the conversation that I had, you know, with my significant other, and when we were talking and she said, well, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? What do you want to do next? And we talked through that. I basically described those things to her, and she said, so why aren't you looking at those companies? And why aren't you talking to those companies? And I said, well, I don't have the experience. I don't have this. I don't have that, right? So I don't tell people like, oh, how did I make the change? Like, oh, well, you know, I was talking to my wife and she told me that you can do it. You know what I mean? But in reality, I did have somebody that was, for lack of a better word, my motivator, somebody that was able to, while I was sitting there scared, was able to show me that, well, here's the things that you talk about. Here's where you talk about the future and direction of this. Why don't you look at that and have confidence in it, right? Know that being scared is very, very, very true. Like it and Eric, obviously it was only day one, but before going into that day one, I imagine the butterflies, you know, where you're like, you know what to expect, but you don't know what to expect, and you can't know what you don't know.
Right. No, those were definitely there, because there's a whole ton of question marks out there. What's the program look like? Is there any, you know, anything hidden? Is there anything, you know, there's so much that you're taking on, especially when you start moving between verticals, right? You know, I've been doing the automotive retail for so long, and then to move into manufacturing, SLAs are different. Everything really drastically changes. But what I kept coming back to, you know, looking back at what was built over the last 14 years, I mean, really more so since 2012, was, in my opinion, definitely my opinion, was a huge success. You know, if I could do it there, why not do it somewhere else, right? So it doesn't matter what the answers to some of those questions are. We'll find a way. We'll build it from wherever it's at right now. And there's, it's that kind of self-realization that I can do it.
It's funny that you say that, because there's one or two individuals I'm still very, very close with, that one that I worked with at my previous company and one at another auto company. And I look at them the same way that, from what you said, you'll get it done. You know that there's people that you've worked with that have the capability and the talent and the drive that no matter what they do, they would get it done. But they've been working somewhere so long that there's that fear of leaving. Like, would I still be successful somewhere else? And that's part of what I had, that little fear, like, would I be? And I tell people, well, I had the confidence. I had to get a little kick in the butt to actually kind of continue to move forward with that. And if there's one thing I could say to, and I have said it to my two friends, I'm like, you will be successful, or you will do well no matter where you go. Just know that.
Right.
So when the time comes and you're saying that you're going to move, call me. Like, I'd be happy to talk through it with you.
Well, I'll take it back to community and networking real quick too, because I think that was a huge component, that the realization, I don't have to have all of the answers. I shouldn't have all of the answers, but you know what I do have? I've got a network of amazing individuals. You know, I looked at two of you on the podcast, and then extends further into the broader security community. If I don't know, I've got the backing of so many people that I can pose a question to and get opinions from others that have hit these challenges. You're not going it alone.
And I think there, you know, I'm going to play off of something you said a few minutes ago, Brian, about I don't have all the requirements for this job. And I'm going to play off something that you both also just talked about, of if I don't know it in the job, and using that as both a motivator or an inhibitor to making change. And first and foremost, you know, this topic's been coming up a lot lately, just around getting people into the field, keeping people in the security field, getting women and, you know, people from underrepresented groups in the security field. And one of the things we hear a lot is, I'm reading a job description, and I read the job description, and there's 75 different requirements in it. 75, a little hyperbole, but unfortunately not always an exaggeration. And they ask for things that may or may not be possible. And we joked a few weeks ago about, you know, somebody who wanted 15 years of Kubernetes security experience. It's not been around that long. So you have a combination of poorly written job descriptions with unrealistic expectations. And you have that combined with job descriptions which are calling themselves entry level, but requiring 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years of experience. And organizations focused on hire the person that's ready now versus hire somebody with the aptitude and grow them. But that takes time in an organization. It takes focus by a manager or by a colleague to do that and bring you up. And so all of this comes together to give people that are looking at jobs, looking at making changes, this skewed view of what it takes to be in the field, get in the field, stay in the field. And you've got this common, I don't know what the word is. There's just this chatter around imposter syndrome. Like, I couldn't ever be good enough to make that list happen. Or even when they're in the field, the memory of the different things that are claimed to be required, say, I could never meet those expectations. And so we have a lot of people running around at all levels. And even, you know, and I deal with this myself. I'm 25 years in this field, and I still get huge bouts of, why am I, someday they're going to figure out I have no idea what I'm talking about on a particular topic. And so imposter syndrome is one of those things that I think also inhibits people from taking leaps and making changes when they're ready. And overcoming that is not an easy feat, but things like networks, things like talking to each other, things like, you know, vetting out and going, first and foremost, applying for jobs in which you don't meet every single objective, just apply. that we were having a discussion on one of the Slack channels I was on, Colorado Equals Security. It's a, if you're in the Colorado area, I highly recommend coming on. It's free. There's lots of, you know, there's lots of great discussions about security and community and jobs and mental health and diversity. But in there, we were talking about this, and the, you know, there's a twofold problem. There's poor job description writing and unrealistic job description writing, which is something that needs to be equally solved. And that combined with an unwillingness of managers to actually hire somebody that doesn't meet all those unrealistic criteria. So we're perpetuating this problem. And the net result is this, this belief that we are, we don't have enough, we have a, that we have a talent shortage. We don't, I don't think we have a talent shortage. I think we have a good job description shortage. I think we have a too high rate of imposter syndrome, or even worse, the I could never make it in that field syndrome, which is 99.9% of the time false, because we need those people. We need people who know how to learn and come in and learn things. Because I promise you, if I hire you for a tech today, in 2 years, that tech is going to have materially changed. And what am I going to do? Fire them all and hire a new people that are already ready on this new tech to know how to secure it? No, we're going to train them. We're going to evolve them. Why not start early? Sorry, end of rant.
No, no, that was really good. While you were talking, like, I had to go back through my feed because you just touched on something that somebody shared. And I think it's okay to say her name because she shared it on LinkedIn, but Veronica Toscano, Chief of Staff and Privacy Specialist at Cisco. She wrote, 6 months ago, I applied for a Chief of Staff role with the Privacy Office at Cisco. Initially, I didn't want to apply because I did not meet 100% of the requirements. Privacy impact assessments were an unknown. I did not have a certificate in information privacy professional, Europe, CIPP/E. Imposter syndrome kicked in, is what she wrote. And then she goes on to talk about those who helped push her, the books that she had read that said, just do it, just try. And she did. And we'll share the link, but I encourage people to read it because I remember reading it. And this was, you know, 2 days ago. And I think we had already said like we were going to have a discussion around this. And I remember thinking like, wow, that was a good read. And, you know, congrats to Veronica for taking that step. Backing up to when I decided I was going to leave automotive technology. I still wanted to stay in automotive technology. I actually applied at AWS because they were looking for somebody for the AWS automotive group. I applied in 6 seconds. My application was denied. 6 seconds. Somebody was able to figure out that I was not a good fit. Somebody that had been in automotive for 16 years working on an autonomy, AI, and electrification team. 6 seconds. A computer was able to figure out that Brian wasn't good enough.
I think you bring up an interesting point, and I'll take your point one further. I had left a job, and then it appeared. And I applied for my old job that I had written the job description for, and the automated system said, in 30 seconds, I wasn't good enough for the job I had just left. Which maybe because, maybe I was never good enough for it. But
I reached out and sent a letter.
The tech is 40-year-old tech, by the way. The all the tech in the... resume automated applicant tracking systems is ancient and has really big flaws, including capitalization, including it doesn't understand plurals. And I'll see if I can find there's a good post that I remember. I'll see if I can find it and put it in there. But
that would be a great share because I would really love to learn that. I wrote a letter back in and basically explained that the idea of what AWS wants to do is working with the automotive companies from a direct buy standpoint. You're talking about building in systems that you're looking at the vehicle level now, right? You need teams that have been in automotive. I ended up accepting the position I have today at Sentinel One. 6 months later, Bill Foy announces that he's leaving Denso and taking over all the automotive group for AWS. And I thought, that's great for AWS. Bill, phenomenal person, right? Phenomenal leader. And he knows automotive. So maybe they knew all along that first they needed to bring somebody in that really understood automotive. But fast forward today, my previous president that I told you about that was my mentor accepted a position under Bill Foy, right? So they are accepting people now from the automotive field because they realize, like, to really understand the automotive companies and what they do from a direct build standpoint and vehicle architecture standpoint, and not just from the tech side, from the indirect purchasing standpoint, is very, very different, right? And I just remember the feeling that I had when that first resume got kicked back 6 seconds and I was deemed not fit for the position.
It's so dangerous in our field. You know, I guess I make this comment not knowing the breadth, and I'm sure there's others from other fields that could say, ours is the exact same. I can't help but think, as we think about the certifications and the auto ruling out of some of the resumes and potential candidates going through the process, that this becomes really problematic on the long run, right? You know, I and Dan and I know you and I have had conversations about the certifications, and you had a great chart that you were sending around on how many certifications there are in security. And I think it becomes problematic if we use that as the gateway kind of litmus test on to be able to get to an actual interview, right? Because the certifications themselves, and again, I'll preface this with saying, I'm not saying there's no place for certifications. There's some really good certifications out there that we could highly recommend, that some of them actually do show that you know the material very well, but there's a lot of them that really you could read a book over the course of a week, take the test, and you're good to go. That doesn't mean you actually know it. That means that you could retain the information just long enough to take the test, not that you can actually put it into practice. And I think that becomes problematic because that diminishes the potential for some of the candidates that are coming out the other side and getting into organizations. And I think you run the potential, and I've seen people, and I'm not saying this is indicative of every person that has a ton of certifications, but there are people out there that have a ton of certifications that you probably wouldn't want on a security team, depending on the role you're trying to fill. For instance, if you're looking for somebody that's got a lot of soft skills, that sometimes that can be indicative of the lack of better terms, like the IT gremlin, right? And there's places for that. There absolutely are. But I think we as an HR organization and security kind of working together have to have an understanding of what is it, what type of candidate are we actually looking for? And if we're looking for somebody that is more on the soft skills side, then we can't have the gateway be the highly technical and looking at those certifications. That was really long-winded.
No, and it's really good. I think part of what you're saying too, though, is leaders and management have to be careful when they talk about company culture. But then when you're going through trying to hire someone and you're only looking at, like you said, 50 million different certifications, do they check this, and this box? There's also part of that culture fit. Are we going to work together as a team? Eric, earlier when you were talking about the hills, right? And as you climb one hill and get to the next spot, to climb that next or get over that next hurdle sometimes requires a different team. But even to get over the first hill requires, like you said, a team. One individual doing it by himself, by the time he gets to the next one, he's going to be worn out if he doesn't have a team to help him get over the first one. I recently volunteered to be a mentor for WMSA. And my mentee is a student at the University of Michigan. And this is so great, Eric, because one of the questions she asked me, I said, hey, feel free to ask me anything. I go, understand. I go, I know enough to be dangerous, but I don't know everything there is to know about every certification, the courses you're taking, but I can give you direction just based on my career and what I've done the last year and a half in security and what I know from what my colleagues tell me or people tell me that you should be concerned with, from either, you know, do I need 100 certifications? Do I need a degree in this? Do I need this? And she asked, she goes, well, what would you recommend then from a certification standpoint? Or what would you recommend if I was to focus on something language-wise, right? And she was talking about language of code, et cetera. And I said, well, tell me this, what are you currently studying? And she went through her classes. And one of the classes she came to was, and I don't want to get this wrong, but I think it was African art or North African art. It was some type of art in Africa. And I said, that's interesting. I go, how'd you come up with that? And she goes, well, I had the chance to take an elective. And I go, so was that just a random pick? And she goes, well, no, I've always really been into art. She goes, I actually You know, did a little bit of studying of that when I was in high school. I do some painting. I go, that is awesome. I go, so what's your favorite course? She goes, it's actually the art course. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'm like, that is really, I go, see, I go, if I didn't ask what your favorite course was or what courses you were taking, I wouldn't have known that. I go, and those are the things I go, I'm just letting you know, I've done a lot of interviewing. When you're sitting across from someone and they, and I was guilty of this in my first interviews out of college, when somebody asked me what my favorite course was, and I was a chemical engineer, my first response was, oh, I love transport phenomena, because I expected that that's what they wanted to hear on the other side. And then I dive into like what our final project was. I hated that course. Like that was the toughest course ever. Like there wasn't really anything I liked about it besides the fact that when I said the name out loud, my friends had no idea what it meant. Like, so I was being dishonest with myself. And I'm sure if the person on the other side heard that my favorite course in college was actually advanced sailing, and not just because we got to go on the 6-day sail trip, but those people that we went with became your closest friends. Like you had to work together for 6 days, you know, like that stuff was amazing. Right. But I never actually said that till now. And then when I tell people that, they see that teamwork. And I wanted to tell her, I go, whatever you do, if somebody asks you what your favorite course is, don't be afraid to tell them that. Like, definitely let them know that, because it's they'll see the other side of you too. And there is a person there that people have to get to know and have to work with.
And we are the, I think it's important too to, you know, so my background, I went to school, I was in the engineering school, I think for roughly an hour when I got handled the schedule and said, okay, where's the time for electives? And they said, there is none. Here's the, this is your schedule. And I said, all right, thanks. I'm going across the street. So I went across the street to the Letters and Science College, to the computer science department. And started that because, and it turns out my favorite classes, I loved computer science. It was great. I loved the math. I loved the other things, were my history classes. And my favorite one was in the classics department, Greek and Latin origins of medical terms. I'm not using any of that today, but you know what I am using? The ability to learn broadly across many topics. And this comes back to, yes, stay with me, because this does hang on to, you know, job change and other things, is about breadth of opportunity, staying in one vertical, staying in one type of job, only running security operations centers. That the way we grow our brain is by experiencing new things, experiencing different things, same topic, different perspective, same perspective, different topic. All of these come into helping us get a better perspective of the world. I mean, heck, this is why we created this podcast, was to look at a topic from 360 degrees. All of that helps us be better learners, better workers, better thinkers. You know, the value, if anybody doubts the value of a liberal arts education, please come find me, and I will bend your ear for at least 2 hours on, I'd rather have somebody who can think than somebody who knows who knows all of the specifics.
And I was also, when you guys put out the idea of doing a podcast, I'm not going to lie, I was actually nervous to come do a podcast with you guys. I was like, man, like these guys have been in the industry for a really, really long time. Like, I don't know how often I can pivot to a food story or a food analogy and get away with that. Right. Like, but I just want to say, like, when you talked about imposter syndrome, it was like, man, the first few times we got on, when we come up with topics, I was like, I tell, you know, my significant other, like, she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm researching stuff for tomorrow. That way, you know, there's some topics I can discuss. And she would ask what the topic is. I tell her, and she's like, I have no idea what that means, you know. But there was part of me that had that feeling of, do I know enough? Am I capable enough to sit and have a conversation, you know, with two people that have been in the industry for a very, very long time, two people that have been in the trenches for a very long time. And going back to making changes, like Dan, you made some really big changes. You went from working at a corporation or an enterprise level to then going in and starting your own business. And I'm sure there had to be a lot of butterflies and scares, like, am I good enough? Am I capable enough? Right? Like, I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, it was a very it was a big change for me. I'd spent most so when I started my career, I actually had a small business while I was still in college, building out networks for medical billing systems for doctors' offices. That's actually where I found my love of security. This was in the mid '90s, and you know, doctors didn't want to pay $1,000 a month for a T1 to this remote office they'd use for a day a week. And so started playing with the internet and dial-up and VPNs, and that meant networking and firewalls. This is while I was still in college and in my undergrad, and it really solidified my love of both infrastructure and of the security of infrastructure. I had that for a while, and then I got engaged. I said it was the late night. It was 1999. The bubbles had burst, and I said, you know what? I think I better go get a real job, quote unquote, real job. And so I did, and I went into enterprise. And I was in enterprise then for the next 20-some years. And it was one of those things that I just always had this itch to go back and do again and build something again. I loved my time in organizations. But, you know, you got to a point with the most recent role where I said, I think I've accomplished that which I came here to accomplish, which is to build a security program, and added on building a privacy program as GDPR came about in my time in that role and launching it. And so I started to think about what came next and whether or not I could make that step off the edge of the cliff. And it was a lot of discussion. It was a lot of thought, a lot of introspective thought about, am I good enough to do, am I, you know, if you're going to go out and do your own thing, it's not just about doing the technology. It's not just about helping people secure things. It's about building a business around you and all of the pieces that you take for granted in an enterprise. You know, the people who send the invoices, the people who take the check and get it to the bank, the people who review your contracts, the people, you know, all of these things that you do are now on you when you're starting a small consultancy. And all of that was where I really got, you know, gut-wrenched was just, can I do all of these things? And eventually, when I got to the point where I said, you know what, I think it's time to leave the role that I'm in, it was primarily because I had done what I had come there to do. I've known, you know, I'm a known entity. I'm very transparent with people. I have a 5-year shelf life. If I'm in a role and it hasn't materially changed or we haven't, you know, I know that at 5 years is about when I need to do some pretty significant pivoting of myself. It's just my own brain. I'm honest about it. Now, take me as I am. And this was 7 years, so I had already gone over that time frame. But GDPR was a big help in that. But I got to the point where I said, you know, I think I've done what I came here to do. And it was fairly clear to me that the time was right. But I think the stepping off the edge, the calling on my network, you know, you build a business, you start a business based on the people you know, and based on the people, you know, you talk to the people you know, and you say, hey, I need help. I need your help getting the word out that I'm working on these things, that I've got this business called Socratic, that I'm doing consultancy, and why I want to do it, and why I'm taking this step, and why people, you know, benefit from me doing it for them. Because I don't have a marketing budget like a large consultancy. I have my reputation. I have the reputation of the people that I work with. And so I needed a network to do that. And that was an important part of making, you know, this business into a success. Do I still have questions every day about, did I make the right choice? Less and less. It is clear that this was the right path. I got a chance in the middle to do a phenomenal, you know, a phenomenal run with Michigan State University as the interim chief information security officer, which also unfortunately, it also solidified the fact that I really do like being part of organizations too. So I am a person of multiple dimensions. So, you know, I know what I have an idea of what comes next when that time comes. But for now, you know, it's been a good run, but I think I knew I needed to make the change. Well, no, I think I knew I needed to make the change. And I got the support of the people around me, including my family. And it was slow for a while as you got, you know, you step off the edge and you have to build up. And, but take the time, give yourself the time, give yourself, make sure you have the support and make sure you use the people around you to help bolster both the skills. I mean, I still call on people where there's gaps in the scope of work I'm done, where I'll say, hey, you know, can you help me with this compliance effort? Hell, can you help me with this? That, you know, and we do work together places where I can't be everything to everybody. And if you think you are, you're lying to yourself and the people around you. Use the network. So coming back to Eric's point, build your network. You never know how it's going to be used. You also don't want the first time you reach out to somebody to be when you need something from them. Build it in advance. Build the people, build the community around you so that they actually know you. And when the time comes to say, hey, I need some help, they actually know how to help you because they know who you are.
Yeah, and going a bit Wreck-It Ralph on you guys here. You know, I think about when Brian, you're talking about, you know, looking at us being in the industry for a while. I think what it comes down to is I don't know. Dan doesn't know, you don't know, and that's okay.
Yep.
And that's, totally. I mean, once you come to that realization, then you start to realize that it's self-actualization, right? You start to look inside yourself and see what you can absolutely do. And it's through the community that you can do that, that where you do have those, you don't have those answers that you're drawing upon on people around you to help bolster you and keep moving you in the same direction. You know, I couldn't help but think too, you know, Brian, when you were talking about, you know, taking the different opportunities and interviewing at least once a year, came back to, and I think it was Wayne Gretzky that said it, right? You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. And I think that is, that's pretty key that, sure, you might miss, you might have a couple of the bullet points that you don't align on the job rec. Take the shot anyways. So what? So what? If you don't get it, you learned. You had another conversation that now you've added, you know, to go video game on this, you've added a skill point to your interviewing. Now, the next time you do an interview, you're going to be more comfortable. Or maybe you learn that, hey, this is an area that you need to shore up. Those are great opportunities. So what if you get shot down? Stand back up, take another shot, learn, and adapt.
That's great advice.
At the risk of quoting Chumbawamba, if I get knocked down and I get up again, you're never going to get me down.
Yeah, that is such good advice. Like, and I think that goes back to you, not everybody needs somebody in their corner, but sometimes more often than not, it takes somebody to say, hey, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. You need a little Wayne Gretzky in the back, right? It's one of the reasons why I actually decided I want a mentor. Like after stepping out and doing something different, I had done different roles in my previous job and I was successful and worked hard at those, right? But leaving and doing something else felt like it was going to be tough to do, right? Like that, everything is going to be tough in life. And this goes back to Dan, you said something, not knowing. Not knowing is the hardest thing in life. Not knowing what's going to happen next. It goes back to when you said, like, you took an exam, you turn the exam in and you go talk to your friends. And one of them says, oh, I think I killed it. Right. And you're like, oh, I didn't feel that way. And for the next 4 days, all you can do is sit there and have anxiety. Like if he did well, you know, and he didn't really even study, maybe I didn't do well. And you build up in your own head that maybe you didn't do good or maybe you weren't good enough. And it goes back to that imposter syndrome, but then you also touched on network, right? In connecting with people. And Eric, you've said it before. One of the things that people do in the security world, in if there's so many different companies out there, vendors, right? And I work for one of those vendors. Is this a good product? Well, I'm going to also talk to my peers. What do you guys think of this? Not just this, what do you think of this person, right? And it's the same thing. You build your own brand. And Dan, you said, you know, I am who I am, and I think people know me, and I built a reputation. And if you built a very good reputation for yourself and people trust you, the book, The Speed of Trust, business not only gets done faster, decisions are made faster when people trust each other. And you build that up. And if you go ask, if somebody asked Eric, is Dan a good person? And Dan, they trust Eric. And Eric says, absolutely. He's a great person. they're not going to go ask three or four other people because one, they trust Eric because Eric's a highly trustworthy person. And two, it builds on the character of Dan.
That's good. How much do I owe you for that comment, by the way?
So I put it up on the side. The listeners can't see that.
Apple Pay? Are you okay with that?
All right. No, but I'm being serious. And it comes back to that. That's why people back channel people for interviews, right? You interview someone and they do a great job and you back channel them to two or three people. You reach out and say, hey, do you know this person? And they say, yeah. What do you think of them? Salt of the earth person? Yeah. Extremely, extremely hard worker, not a team player. Oh, really? You know, or extremely hard worker, great team player. Sometimes you got to tell him, hey, it's time to go home, you know, spend some time with your family. He works that hard. But, you know, he's great, great person, very trustworthy. It's like, wow, I love that type of a team player, works really, really hard. You know, that's why you do the back channel and you, right. And you trust, you ask those that you trust.
So as we come close to the end of our time again, there's one more topic I want to touch on. And I want to get both of your thoughts. We've talked a lot about knowing when it's time for you to make a change. What about when you know that it's time for somebody else to make a change in their role and helping them be ready to do that, or helping, how do you broach that topic with somebody to say, I think you've done what you can do. It's a delicate topic, of course. And you may want to consider, you know, something different.
In the pre-COVID, I would have said candles, robes, and an intervention. But we can't gather anymore. So
we take them to a spa and tell them it's time to change their job.
There you go. No, that's
it's time to clean this off and wipe new. Actually, Eric, I was going to jump in. I had this conversation with someone 3 weeks ago, won't jump into it in its entirety, but I didn't know how to have it because I didn't want them to feel like I was telling them you need to make a change or you're doing the wrong thing. But I tried asking like how things are going. Are you happy? And I tried to put my best foot forward to say, I honestly think you could go anywhere and be even more successful than the position you're in and have more time with your family. And if you're worried about taking the step out, I know that you're going, like, I tried to reinstill that, but again, it falls to the person. And I pivoted back to my significant other to kind of be my kick in the rear.
Yeah. And I'll build on what you were saying, Brian and Dan, you touched on this earlier on family being a huge component. And you can tell on the people, I mean, we know for those around us who have families and kids and stuff like that, that's a huge element of who we are, right? And it's a very, very important element.
So, I mean, Brian, I want to build on something you just said there and you know, the idea of family and the fact that there's, you know, we in our families, families are really important to so many of us. Those of us with them, those of us with extended families, those that are caregiving for others. And there's a level of stability that exists. We find, maybe it's just detente. We find a balance in the way we work, in the way we work our family. And some that might be that balance or the lack of balance might be a good motivator for people to make changes in their lives. Or it might be a family member that says, hey, you aren't the same person you were 5 years ago when you were going into this role. Maybe it's time. Maybe you're not having as much fun. Maybe you're not. Maybe it's time to look at something different. Another good thing is, and this is something I wrestle with because, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, I grew up in a time in which people didn't change jobs. They didn't make changes in their careers. They, you know, my parents, my mother was a professor for 42 years. My father had his medical practice for, you know, 35 years. You know, it was the same place, the same role, the same life, but the world around them changed. And, you know, and that was great, but we live in a different time. And one of the lessons we always grew up with was, you know, stick it out, make it work. You know, Tim Gunn at his best, make it work, people. But I think society is a little different now. And the idea of changing roles to ensure you have a good level of personal and family happiness is important, but it's also important to think about the message that that conveys to our children, to our families around us, the role models that we are, to the people closest in our lives, by the way we leave our, by the way we lead our lives, our careers. These are the lessons that they're going to take into their careers. And for all I know, by the time they get into the workforce, it's going to be materially different and everybody will be gig economy and everybody, you know, you'll have micro jobs for 30 seconds and move on to the next thing. But for now, the best thing I can do is give my son the example that I want him to walk forward with, which is there is balance in the world. There is balance in the world, and you can help achieve it by making the changes necessary to live the life that keeps you happy, not indulgent, but happy, not miserable, but happy. And on that note, thank you everybody for joining us today for another great security debate. This has been a great one, and one that I know comes up in a lot of side discussions with people. I don't know about you guys, but every time a security, two or more security or privacy people get together, the topic of career path ends up. We've already had another episode about career path already. But this is one, especially as we're in a time of crisis, that I know a lot of people are talking about more and more. So thank you, Brian. Thank you, Eric, for great insights as always. If you are listening and would like to subscribe to the podcast, please go to your nearest podcast application and hit the subscribe button. If you're really feeling like this was a good one, leave a comment. Those are really important, and we get good feedback from those and help adjust the show accordingly. If you don't want to put it in a podcast app and you want to email it to us, feedback@greatsecuritydebate.net, go to our website, www.greatsecuritydebate.net, or on Twitter @securitydebate. Thanks so much. Have a great day, and we will see you on the next Great Security Debate.